How are you doing? Or if you were the character Joey Tribbiani on the old TV sitcom Friends, it would be said as, how are you doing? Of course, the way we Americans speak English, the usual purpose of the question, how are you doing, is to inquire about someone's mood, their situation, whether they are stressed or calm, busy or available, happy or sad, full of zip, or all worn out. How are you doing? For a moment, ignore the question's idiomatic meanings of what's your mood, what's the state of your life right now. Instead, when it asks how, a literal understanding of the question would be asking about a process for doing something, the style one uses for a particular activity. It's the follow-up question to, are you doing such and such? The next question would be, how are you doing such and such? And that seems to be what Jesus is interested in as we hear him in Matthew's Gospel in the Sermon on the Mount this morning. Today I conclude my Lenten sermon series focused on the Sermon on the Mount. Throughout Lent, we've discovered how the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' clearest presentation of his most direct teachings about what it means for us to share life together as his disciples. One week we listened to the Beatitudes and we heard Jesus pronounced as blessed by God, the very people who our power-hungry, money-loving, fame-thirsting world tosses aside as weak and useless and worthless. But no, God says they're blessed. We heard Jesus tell us that we are to be noticeable difference makers in the world, just as salt adds flavor and light illuminates. In those sayings that began, you have heard that it was said, but now I say to you, in those sayings we heard Jesus encouraging us that we don't have to strive to win at the game of life, but instead we are to embody different God-centered values in our life. And today in Matthew chapter 6, I propose that we hear Jesus asking, how are you doing? He asks not in the colloquial way that we normally inquire about someone's mood or someone's busyness. Jesus truly is interested in how we do the things we do in our effort to honor and serve God. So in Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 through 18, Jesus touches on three religious practices common in his day. Giving, praying, fasting. Giving for the sake of people in need. We might think of it as charitable giving. In the Bible and elsewhere, it's sometimes referred to as giving alms. Then there's praying, we know what that is. And then fasting, voluntarily refraining from eating or drinking for a certain period in order to achieve greater spiritual clarity. In raising each of those subjects, giving alms, praying, and fasting, in each of those, Jesus cautions, don't be like the hypocrites who do it in such and such a way. For example, Jesus says that the hypocrites give charitably for the sake of people in need. The way they do it is that they make a big deal of it. Different translations say they make a big show of it. They call attention to themselves. One says they announce it with trumpets. Now, Jesus was using that trumpet image for emphasis. There's no evidence that gifts, even large gifts, were signaled by trumpet blasts, but Jesus used an equally unrealistic image to paint the picture of the humble approach we should take in our charity. He said in today's translation, your best friend shouldn't even know. In other translations, he says, your left hand should not know what your right hand is doing. Now, a little insight might help us see what Jesus is driving at. For us, the word hypocrite has a negative connotation. We think of hypocrites as what? Deceitful, false, two-faced, showy. None of us wants to be a hypocrite. But I learned that in the original Greek language of Matthew's gospel, the word that's translated as hypocrite is a neutral term without all that negative baggage. Hypocrites literally meant stage actors. And of course, as Owen and Eileen and Hugo and Kaylee and Morgan and others who do theatrical works in their schools, as they all know, actors play their roles conscious of the audience they're playing for. So what Jesus is saying, that a person engaged in a religious act, not for the sake of the act itself, but for how it will be perceived by those who happen to witness it, is like a hypocrite play-acting in order to impress an audience. Jesus offers two other illustrations of religious hypocrisy, where people make a big deal of praying so as to be noticed by others, and where people engage in the act of fasting with such a fuss, it's as though they're crying out, poor me, look how much I'm sacrificing because I'm so devoted to God. So in each of these examples, Jesus in effect is asking each of us, how are you doing? It's not only a matter of what you do, but also how you do it. So how are you going about living out the consequences of your trust in God? Jesus himself modeled his concern for how his followers lived their faith. We heard it in today's account of Jesus entering Jerusalem, a little trailer that Todd gave the kids, and then the reading that Kathy offered, the story of Palm Sunday. By his ministry and his very life, Jesus announced God's plan for saving humankind. All who accepted him as the embodiment of God's love and mercy were saved. All who accepted him. Solely by God's grace, and not from any earned or deserved qualification, solely by God's grace, believers were saved from the consequence of their sinful nature. But salvation was not forced upon us, like a conquering army forces its will upon a subjected people. Rather, with humility and with grace, Jesus offered God's acceptance and forgiveness to any who would receive it. This humble, gracious, not forceful invitation was something Jesus embodied in how he chose to enter Jerusalem. Now, think about it. How would mighty figures have made their entrance? Sitting on an ornate saddle, mounted on a mighty stallion, preceded and followed by countless ranks of military forces with flags and banners flapping in the breeze, accompanied by the blaring of trumpets, the crashing of cymbals, the pounding of drums. Now, the difference between Jesus taking charge of a colt for his triumph, the difference between that and a king or a general adopting the same animal as a show of humility is that for that great man, this would be simply a gesture. He could select the right animal from among his stores and spoils to make the desired impression. But for Jesus, the colt wasn't even his. He had to borrow it. It's not a show of humility. It is humility in fact. Humility as a condition of who he was. In fact, this borrowing of the colt is consistent with the rest of Jesus' life. I mean, he borrows the parade, he borrows the mount. In the next chapter, he borrows a coin to illustrate a point about taxes. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, God what is God's. He borrows, throughout his ministry, he borrows his lodging for the night. If you think about it, he borrows his earthly father. In Luke's account, he borrows his birthplace, a manger. And by all accounts, he borrows from Joseph of Arimathea his tomb. So Jesus entered Jerusalem not on a bejeweled saddle atop a mighty steed. He plodded down the Mount of Olives on the cloak-covered back of a donkey's foal. He entered accompanied by his 12 apostles and the crowd of disciples who had followed his recent journeys. No flags, no banners, only olive and palm branches waved enthusiastically. No throngs pouring out of Jerusalem to welcome the conquering hero. Jesus passed through the city gates, just another stranger among merchants and pilgrims and beggars and scholars. And he went into the temple, the seat of Jewish religious authority, looked around at the people coming and going, tending to the day's business, probably oblivious of yet another country rabbi visiting the big city. After 3 years of walking and preaching, and walking and teaching, and walking and healing, and walking and befriending, and walking and now riding the final mile of his lifelong journey from Bethlehem to Egypt to Nazareth to Capernaum to Jericho to Jordan. After preparing his message of grace to the common people, to those who were Jewish and to those who were not, after bringing his message to the religious authorities who had contested and combated him all along the way, after gathering his nerve and accepting his call and making his way to the spiritual center of Judaism, Jesus looked around, and that was it. He looked around at the temple and its grounds. And then he and the apostles went back to their home for the night, back up that steep and twisted path of the Mount of Olives to the village of Bethany, back to rest from the physical and emotional rigors of that momentous day when he came face to face with the temple and its religious establishment that had challenged him and sought to trap him and eventually would entrap him and ultimately extinguish him. Or so they thought. How was Jesus doing? How was Jesus doing? Notice what he did. In taking on the greatest challenge of his earthly life, in In facing the challenge to his very life itself, Jesus modeled for his followers that while we are called to do what's right, it's more important to do things the right way. For Jesus making his presence known by entering Jerusalem, how he was doing it mattered as much as actually doing it. How do we approach this holy week ahead of us? If we focus only on Easter, we miss appreciating how Jesus endured challenges, trials, and testing, betrayal, abandonment, even torture and death, real death. Without an appreciation of what Jesus endured and sacrificed for the sake of the very people he loved, without an appreciation of what he sacrificed, we see only a fraction of the gift of Easter. Easter not only celebrates his resurrection to life, Easter celebrates the triumph of God's love over our all too common and comfortable human sinfulness. What if this year you humbly walked where Jesus walked and didn't just consider Holy Week from the outside looking in? What if you didn't just hold Holy Week at arm's length and instead prayed for true appreciation of Jesus' faithfulness amid chaos, amid crisis? Oh, we will emerge at the joy of Easter. But along the way, we will learn from Jesus and experience for ourselves how Jesus faced life's challenges. How? With humbleness of spirit, with faith in God's mercy, and with trust in God's power to overcome the powers that would overwhelm us. Thanks be to God.